Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Steady Van Web, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, still alive and kicking Williams.
Yes, clearly he thought about that before he started speaking.
You know, I didn't, and it's just, I think it's a little obvious on the nose, but it's okay. I think
We could. I think
we could subversively, like, just like slip that into the show and nobody will notice, especially since we're still talking about it. We have a great show in store for you today as we are capping off a wonderful month of celebrating the iconic Bruce Lee by reviewing one of his more latter works that he wasn't directly involved in. However, it still is in the filmography of the martial arts star himself, and that is 1978's Game of Death. So we're going to be talking about that, all the things that it had to do with it, and kind of give our opinions. But before we do, Spencer, take it away.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. Now, as for the synopsis for the Game of Death, Billy Lowe, a champion fighter and movie star, fakes his death to escape and then expose the crime syndicate that wants to control him. When his fiance Anne is kidnapped, Billy comes out of hiding and infiltrates the gang's headquarters, a restaurant where Billy engages in one-on-one combat with a number of increasingly difficult, deadly opponents.
All right, we're jumping right into this. Sure. So, talking about Game of Death. The film that debuted in 1978, directed by Robert Klaus, the same director who did Enter the Dragon. The film stars Bruce Lee, James Tien, Gig Young, Dean Jagger, Che Huan, Dan Inosanto, Ji Han Jae, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Robert Wall, Mel Novak, and Hwang In-sik. There's several other people that are a part of this film, but we'll talk about how some people are credited and some people didn't want to be credited, to be quite honest. Bruce Lee had actually filmed over 30 minutes of fight scenes for this film when work was suspended to allow Lee to work on Enter the Dragon, which was back in 1973. However, Lee died before he could return to this film, and 6 years later, director Robert Klaus fleshed out a feature film around the original footage with a new cast, including two stand-ins for Bruce Lee, whose faces are hidden by either dark sunglasses or shadows. Close-ups and stills of Lee's face, including a cardboard cutout, were also used. So it's very interesting how the nature of this film is very, very, very talked about widely because of the fact that this film was done 6 years after his death. So you have a movie that was a part of his vision but never really fleshed out to be his vision. And that does kind of rub a lot of people the wrong way, like plain and simple. It's really weird because Steve McQueen, James Coburn, and Muhammad Ali, all people who respected Bruce Lee at the time, refused roles in the film because they felt it exploited his death and because of the low pay Golden Harvest was offering. Subsequently, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar appeared in only the original version but refused to appear in the new version. So in the new footage, his role is played by a double. So I don't know where they got a tall enough double like that, but still.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The fact remains is that this movie created so many waves in the I guess, Hollywood. Not even just Hollywood, just like in that particular circle of people. It just rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. The fact that somebody was actually going to take that footage and still make something out of it. Because what did we say? How long was Game of Death? Game of Death is
an hour and 40 minutes, roughly.
An hour and 40 minutes. And only 30 minutes of it is stuff that Bruce Lee actually filmed.
Right.
So this was a very controversial and even kind of taboo thing to do at the time. In Bruce Lee's original story plot, he actually was supposed to play a world-renowned martial artist named Hai Tien. Tien was to be approached by the Korean underworld and told about a mysterious treasure at the top of a pagoda. Tien would want nothing to do with it, but would cooperate after his sister and younger brother are kidnapped. Although the name Hai Tien came up at least once in the archive footage, his name was ultimately changed to Billy Low, which is his name in Game of Death. And mind you, that is a really interesting storyline. It was supposed to be a little bit more classical, like Chinese, not so much modernistic, but I don't know. This is one of those movies where I'm actually genuinely torn when I think about it, and then rewatching it kind of stirred up all these other emotions that I'm like, now that I've gotten some mileage under me of reviewing movies and talking about movies and discussing things and having interviews with people who are in the industry and so forth, it's like I got a lot of like honest opinions about this. So let me ask you, Spence. Had you seen this movie prior to this?
Nope.
You've never seen Game of Death?
Nope. I'm only familiar with like his iconic like outfit in this, and that's about it.
The yellow jumpsuit?
Yep.
And that's interesting because of the fact that you bought the Criterion collection of Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this in it, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's how I watch this.
But it's a trip, however, though, in the event of, you know, this kind of legacy that Bruce Lee led, it's interesting that they include this particular film as part of that legacy, you know? Because
it is a part of it now.
Well, now? I mean, like, now that it's already become, like, part of pop culture and everything, but at the time, or even leading up to it, I feel like, I don't know, I just have really strong feelings about both sides of the coin, I guess, on this particular film.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll dive into that as we discuss the film itself. The budget for the film was $850,000. The worldwide box office gross, however, amounted to $43 million, which, according to inflation, nowadays is $170
million. Okay, with those inflation numbers ready to go.
Well, I figured I don't want to hear you get upset about it again. Like, you don't have the inflation, or you have to make a big old pause because you're going to look it up right there and then in the middle of the show.
How much is that? I got to know.
But and it's interesting because Enter the Dragon made $1 billion, according to inflation, made $1 billion with the same budget. At $850,000. So it's very interesting that this type of film didn't really, I guess, agree with a lot of fans when it hit the theaters, you know?
That's not surprising in the slightest.
Well, and why do you think that is?
Have you seen the first 3 minutes of this movie? Because I feel all sorts of ways about this. It's a wild ride. I was not prepared for this at all. It was like so atrocious that I can just see the word of mouth of being like, yeah, no, this is just a cash grab. Don't go see that. Like, that's clearly what happened.
You really think so?
Yes. I know so. Without even looking it up, just based on what I've seen thus far.
So, obviously, expectations going in prior to watching the film for you, what did you know about it coming into it? Like, what was the only thing you knew?
Literally, like, yellow jumpsuit, last film, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, that is it.
Huh. And it's interesting because, like I said, this is one of the more talked about and subsequently known films of Bruce Lee. However, his direct involvement is zero to nil, practically, you know. And it's funny because like you got the collection, it's considered a Bruce Lee movie, but it's not a Bruce Lee movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the only reason why we agreed to talk about it was because of the fact that there are so many people who include this film in the diatribe, if you will, of Bruce Lee films. Like, it's one of those movies. You cannot speak about Bruce Lee movies without talking about Game of Death and all of its all of everything that it includes. And that's one of those types of instances where it's like, well, then what do you consider it? You know, is it one of his films, or is it just a film that uses his footage? And in that mindset, does that still honor the man, or does that kind of take away from what he's done thus far within the industry? You know,
mm-hmm.
A lot of those kind of questions of recognizing what is considered his work and what's just considered people using him or the likeness of him, you know. Yeah. I don't know, it's something we'll talk about. But your first, I just have to know. Oh, and you grabbed the box. What did you see on the box?
Oh, because I decided I wanted to take a look at on my movie box exactly what it said it was. And it's Bruce Lee, The Greatest Hits. And now that I think about it, you know, hits has a double meaning there. It doesn't necessarily mean his greatest movies. It just means, you know, he hit really great in this. And you know what?
Oh, my God.
That's true. It's very true.
That is very true.
It's a very good way to be
subversive that way and be like,
yeah.
You know, you want to buy this. So I have to know your first impression as soon as the movie was fully done. And mm-hmm. Wait, pause, time out on that. I'm literally putting my hands up like people can see. Pause. Did you actually see it all the way through, or did you stop at any point?
Of course I stopped. I stopped 3 minutes into this movie because I was like, what is happening? This is not what I was expecting in the slightest. You know, the credits are rolling. I'm like, okay, I'm getting into it. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Why is the fight scene from, what is it, Enter the Dragon? Or not
the
Enter
Way the Dragon.
The one before that.
Way of the Dragon.
Yeah, Way of the Dragon. Why is that in here? And then all of a sudden there's a studio crew, and then it cuts, and then it's a different actor, and they made him filming Bruce Lee's movies, and I was just like, what is happening? And I stopped the movie when they had that cutout picture plastered over of Bruce Lee's face, plastered over the stand-in actor. I was like, who thought this was a good idea? Why did they think this was a good idea? Like, there was, like, I took, like, 5 minutes just to take a break because it was too much already. And then I continued onward and watched the rest of the movie.
Well, I'm glad you actually finished all the way through it. and mind you, like I said, with having already seen it for myself and then mm-hmm. rewatching it, I kind of had this inner conflict within myself of like, all right, why am I watching this? What is this doing for me? What is it doing for Bruce Lee fans? What is it doing for Bruce Lee himself in terms of his career? And is it worth it? I think was the ultimate thing I came to. Like, is it worth it, number one, to have made it? Number two, to have included him? And number three, to be a part of that echelon of films that Bruce Lee, that when you think of Bruce Lee, you think of that. Like, even people who haven't seen it, you ask them, like, what's a famous Bruce Lee movie? And they'll tell you probably Enter the Dragon and Game of Death. More than most, that's usually what most people say. So being a part of that, like, echelon, that the top tier of his movies, which, sadly, his list is not very long. It's probably like five movies.
It's a real shame.
Yeah, it's a real big shame because this is the fourth week, so four movies that we missed, Chinese Connection. But well, it's the same thing. Fist of Fury, because Fists of Fury
mm-hmm.
is this, I believe it's Fists of Fury is the same as Chinese Connection. Fist of Fury, I believe, was the other name of The Way of the Dragon. Oh, I'm sorry, The Big Boss. All right. I don't know. Yeah, whatever. Who knows these days? But But either way, technically we're supposed to know. But either way, this is a movie that just lends itself to conversations like this, where you ask and you pick and you dig into trying to figure out where people fall when the movie ends, like when the credits roll, like on what side of the coin do you land on in terms of as a Bruce Lee fan,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's kind of where I fell in this, like recognizing, all right, how much of a fan am I of Bruce Lee, number one, and number two, how much of myself am I, like, how much of a fan do I consider myself where I'm willing to, it's kind of like those people who are willing to, they're willing to do like whatever it is for like extreme sports. They're willing to like jump off buildings or whatever and parachute down just for the thrill of it. Mm-hmm. Like for the fandom of it, for the fandom of Bruce Lee, is this a movie good enough because of that mindset, or is it like a unique Bruce Lee movie, you know?
Yeah, no, this movie's not good enough. Like, hands down, it's not.
Thank you for putting that cut and dry there.
Like, when you talk about things that are insults to people, like, this is kind of really just a prime example. Like, it is so not what I've come to expect from Bruce Lee in this last month of learning more about the man.
Uh-huh.
It's oh gosh, it's bad. It's really bad.
So before we divulge anything else about how we feel about the movie, let's jump into some of the first things first in terms of the cast and the crew. And obviously, I put Bruce Lee as one of the people who starred in the film, but technically, he didn't really. I mean, he was in 30 minutes of it, but and then a lot of archive footage.
Yeah, but it's like 30 minutes of a different movie that was never completed, that was spliced into this movie.
Well, I mean, if you put it like that, which it's true. But the other actors, so Gig Young, who plays the guy, he was the older, like, mob boss guy, who was Jim Marshall, the guy who showed up at the beginning, who was talking to the cutout with the mouth, the guy who had the knife in his cane. He was a very interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, honestly, a little OP for his abilities. Because Bruce, it's funny, at the very end, towards the very end of the film, when Bruce Lee's going through all those, like, really insane opponents, and then at the tail end, he fights Jim Marshall, and Jim Marshall is able to go toe-to-toe with him for a little while. It's like, yeah, I don't think he was that good of a fighter. And I don't even know why, like, the initiation of that scene when Jim's coming down the stairs, and the guy who's supposed to be playing Billy Lowe, he just reaches and grabs his pant leg and then pulls back. Like, he doesn't even pull him down or anything. He just, like, it's like, boo! He, like, just scares him. It didn't seem like a very, like, effective move. I don't know if he was...
There were lots of very questionable movesets throughout the whole movie. Like, let's talk about, quote-unquote Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when like that, what, like in a different scene, this guy's running away from him on a staircase, but because he's so tall, he just goes womp and like knocks the guy off the staircase. That shouldn't have worked, and that guy should have known to lean away from.
Do you know how tall Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is?
7 feet 2 inches, because I looked it up earlier, because it was ridiculous seeing Kareem and Bruce Lee in the same scene, because he was so much shorter. He had like a foot and a half on him. It was wild.
You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was training with Bruce Lee, right? He was actually one of Bruce Lee's students.
I did not, but that's
yeah.
cool.
So what's interesting, since we're switching over to Kareem, what's interesting about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is that he actually studies with, he was studying at the time, he was studying with Bruce Lee, taking his classes, and oddly enough, the scenes that they filmed, they actually had to slow it down because they were moving too fast for the camera to keep up.
Ooh, that's interesting.
So it,
like
it's
they
really...
slowed down the, they had them slow down, or they slowed down the footage?
No, they had to, they had them slow down.
Oh.
Like they had to slow down all their moves because all, because they already knew how to fight with each other. They already knew how to spar. So their moves were already too quick for the camera to keep up with.
Could you imagine if they were able to capture that? That would have been amazing.
Right. Go back in time with a red camera or something and just like, go ahead, do it all.
Shoot, I'll shoot it with my phone. It would still take...
It's true. And the unique thing about it is because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a student of his, much like Steve McQueen, Steve McQueen was also a student of his, and Chuck Norris, which, by the way, because of that first scene... in the film, the archive footage from The Way of the Dragon, they were going to credit Chuck Norris, and Chuck Norris threatened to sue if they credited him in the film because he wanted nothing to do with the movie.
Oh, that's very interesting because he had a credit in my version of the movie.
No, like a like a like a headlining credit, like a like a like a headlining, yeah, like a top bill.
Yeah, like you're talking about in like the front of the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he?
He's in my version of the movie. I don't know what the version the Criterion has, but yeah, he's in the one I've got. I'm going to double check. But...
Someone going to get in trouble. But yeah, a lot of those actors, a lot of those sport, even Muhammad Ali, he was a friend of Bruce Lee's. You know, the idea of them like, no, I don't want anything to do with this movie. And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar choosing not to go back because of the fact that he didn't want to do it. It wasn't fair to the legacy of Bruce Lee, according to them. The only reason why. So I don't know if you remember this, but the man who played the fighter in the ring with Carl Miller. Remember when they were doing that?
Yeah. What was his name? Lo Chen or something like that?
Yeah, Lo Chen. He's a famous martial artist. He's done a lot of movies. Did you ever see those Ip Man movies?
Mm-mm. Oh, no, I meant to watch that, but I didn't see it.
They're good. He's done a bunch of stuff. He did a TV series and whatnot, And his name is Sammo Kam Bo Hung. Everybody calls him Sammo. Sammo Kam. He's also the same guy that Bruce Lee fights in the beginning of Enter the Dragon.
Oh.
So when they're having that little scene with those like weird looking boxing gloves, that's Sammo.
Hmm.
Yeah. Little tidbit. But the only reason why he actually appeared in this movie was because Bruce Lee had asked him to be a part of the film.
Okay.
And so even after everything, he honored that promise and showed up. And I think they only did all his, they did all of his scenes in like one day. So, which was all in that ring.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can see like there's a distinct difference. If you didn't know of like what the film was going to look like, you would probably just, yeah, it would be one of those movies I think that would fall under the radar. But it lends itself to that, a whole idea of like, okay, where does this film fall within the realm of fans, and where does it fall within the realm of like Bruce Lee fans, not just martial arts fans. It's really interesting because here's the thing. I have to admit, the man who played Bruce Lee, or the man who played Billy Lowe, the stand-ins, they weren't bad fighters.
The only thing that really gave it away for me is that they were dramatically slower.
That is true.
All of a sudden, he slowed down. I'm like, oh, we're on the other guy. Well, besides the fact that his face is wildly different.
It is. Like, oh my gosh. Even the face that they used in the coffin, I think they made it to look like one of the stand-ins for Bruce Lee.
Sense, but like, yeah, I have questions about that, like, fake head. Because for whatever fake porcelain, that looked actually good, and I'm confused on what they did to make it look like that.
Now, one thing, so the funeral scene, I don't know if you know this, they actually took real footage from Bruce Lee's funeral.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the scenes like where he's in the casket and everything, that's Bruce Lee.
So pissed.
Yeah, that's actually the man. Yeah, like... He lives in infamy in that particular film.
Well, that's
like
just
that.
Unacceptable.
Well, I don't even know. I don't know where they would get footage like that. Like, I don't think they planned it a few years later to be like, oh, we should go get footage since he's gone. Like, I don't think that's how they planned it out. They're like, oh, we still got to get footage of that funeral scene. Hey, didn't Bruce Lee just pass? Oh, yeah, we can just go do that. So... Just saying.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting how the dynamic of this film is so unique. In terms of like where the choice for going towards authenticity as opposed to, I don't know, maybe not. You know, not choosing to use that type of footage. Like, I don't get what the thinking was, you know, to be
I
want to
make a movie and I want to make a money off of Bruce Lee who died. That seems to be the entire motivation of this movie. And that just kind of makes it a little bit on the gross side.
You send me the picture. Yep, there's Chuck Norris and all
now,
his hairy
goodness.
Now, to be
fair, it does say featuring, so... Like,
And you know what's funny about this picture you just sent me?
Mm-hmm.
So Danny Inosanto and Bruce Lee were actually best friends.
Oh, neat.
Danny Inosanto is actually the man who trained. He actually trained with Bruce Lee, like they trained together. And Danny was the one who taught Bruce Lee how to master the nunchakus, the ninchucks. So. Which is why having him in that particular scene meant so much to Bruce Lee. So it's interesting how everything ties in, and I'm kind of glad that he wasn't in every other scene as just like a sellout or something. I don't know. What would you call that? Like, how do you consider that for people who choose to continue their or do a film like this even after the fact?
I wouldn't call them sellouts because, like, I can also see another side of this where it's like, you know, like, you knew Bruce Lee, you were working with him, and then he died, and then someone's like, hey, you want to come back and we can try to finish this movie? Like, I could see you might wanting to do that, like, you know, finish what he was trying to start. Like, that seems like a thing a friend would try to do. I don't know how much of an idea of what was actually going on they had, but, like,
yeah.
You know. I could see that, and that could be a nice thing.
That could be a nice thing, he says.
Like, you know, when you, like someone who's not involved in the corporate greed aspect.
Well, there's definitely no corporate greed in this film because apparently everybody got paid pennies.
That is the corporate greed right there, Eddie. Being paid pennies.
Getting paid pennies?
Yeah. That's literally it.
Getting paid pennies.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know, it creates that conversation within fans. It creates that dynamic of like, all right, what are we supposed to do with this movie? What are we supposed to do with this footage? What are you supposed to do with, because like if I was playing the devil's advocate in this situation and I'm like, all right, well, we have this content and we have this opportunity and we have this, you know, I don't know. We have this last ditch effort to honor whatever he was trying to do in that last film. how do you, like, where do you draw the line from honoring someone and paying homage to him and also, and or exploiting him, exploiting mm-hmm. what he gave to the industry, exploiting what he was offering to martial arts fans and martial art movie fans? And like, where do you draw the line? Like, how does that fall? Like, where does that line fall?
Well, okay. So a thing to remember with this line that we're trying to draw is that this was also done in the 1970s. You can, like, the reason I mention that is because...
So you're,
like,
saying the line was drawn with Coke. Got it. Okay.
Probably. But, like, why I mention that is because if this, like, let's move up the timeline slightly. Let's say that he had died, like, within the last 10 years. You could, like, release the footage of a partial movie like that as, like, you know, a Blu-ray box set extra, or just throw it onto YouTube or something. And that could be, like, a really easy way to, like, be respectful to Bruce Lee, but still get the footage out there, because, like, even though most of this movie is hot garbage, I still really liked the fight scenes that he was in. Like, I mm-hmm. did think they were really cool. And so when you're thinking about trying to do that in the 70s, I don't know how you do that. Like, I don't know how you could do that without making something to go around it. Like, if you really were trying to release the footage of, like, because then otherwise you got, like, a TV special or something. But then on the flip side of that, they didn't have to do exactly what they did here. They could have literally, if they had enough of an idea of what he wanted to do, make that movie instead. And then just be like, at the beginning, you could be like, hey, he died. Like, it's super sad. This guy is going to be taking on his role for some parts. It's going to switch back and forth between the two men through the duration of the movie as we have his footage. Like, they could have done something like that, and that would have been awesome to see.
Hmm. Do you think 30 minutes...
I like how I was talking and I fixed the problem with it in my head. I don't know why they didn't just do that.
Like, this is hot garbage. This is that. But you know, you could fix it with this and that. Blah, blah, blah. Do you think, and this is, I guess, the biggest question of all, and this is kind of where I think the line is drawn. Can you adequately honor someone's vision for a film simply based off of 30 minutes of footage? Like, because if I think about it, if I was trying to create a film, like, okay, for instance, take for instance, what am I thinking? Oh, Justice League. DC's Justice League. Yeah,
yeah,
we're going there.
Nobody's died from that. That was just,
well, no one died from this one. Just people died inside for that one. But what I'm saying is, like, technically, yeah, someone did die. Zack Snyder's daughter died. You
okay,
jerk.
But
rude. <don't>.
I mean, Zack Snyder himself is still alive.
Yes, still. You jerk. So you have this instance where, like, with Zack Snyder had a vision for the film, and due to unfortunate circumstances and sadly the passing of his daughter, he was unable to finish the film and handed the reins over to, or the, I guess the studio handed the reins over to, why am I drawing a blank? What's his name? Joss Whedon. They handed it over to Joss Whedon, and Joss Whedon kind of did his thing. Now, until next year, which we won't see it until then, a lot of people saw Justice League, us included, mm-hmm. and realized that movie was the epitome of hot garbage. the absolute highest tier of the hottest garbage of the most junkiest junk in the entire world. However, there have been rumbles and rumors of a Snyder cut, and due to the overwhelming amount of people asking for that, now, next year, we have coming out a Snyder cut of the film. Now, does the first film still is that still considered Zack Snyder's film? Or is that Joss Whedon's film? You know, in terms of that distinction. Because then in that kind of, that's kind of like where I'm talking about, like that line being drawn, like how much of that source material are you pulling from in the original footage, and how much of it are you changing and shaping everything else around it? You know?
That's interesting. Well, because like, I actually never considered the first Justice League Zack Snyder's film. I considered it Joss Whedon's film.
And I believe he did like up to 60-70% of the film. Now I gotta do a Spencer.
Yeah, no, that film I kind of just put all in. Like I guess I wasn't aware at the time how much like input Zack Snyder had. So I guess I kind of just shifted like the entire film's weirdness to Joss Whedon trying to make a movie but having too many of the parts in place to really put his own ideas into it. But then you know, not enough of Zack Snyder in it to like, you know, really be his either. It's like in this weird like, it's like no one's and both theirs at the same time.
It's like Schrodinger's Justice League.
Yeah,
everybody just wished they died in the box. So
it's true though.
It's interesting because like in that same mindset, you look at this. And you look at the situation where you, Spencer, as a viewer, never considered the first Justice League to be Zack Snyder's, always Joss Whedon's.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, do you think it's fair to consider this movie a Bruce Lee movie and not just a movie who uses Bruce Lee's likeness and footage?
No, it's a movie that uses Bruce Lee's likeness.
Because it's funny.
Especially because they took a funeral scene. Now that I know that
yeah.
That's gross.
It's gross. Because after this movie, and obviously throughout that time, but specifically after this film, there came a ton of Bruce Lee kind of like replicas, I guess you want to say. Bruce Lee likenesses, Bruce Lai. You had, what was it called? I gotta look this up now.
Mm.
There's movies called like Enter the Black Dragon. there's so many movies that riffed off of what Bruce Lee had done, and then began to create this whole like just dynamic of movies based on characters similar to Bruce Lee. I mean, even if we look at video games. Like Tekken, are we for real? Tekken's character, what was his name? I gotta look up the character list now, cause there's that one that we all know looks just like Bruce Lee. I gotta look for him now. Oh my gosh, do you know what I'm talking about though?
Nope.
Did you ever play Tekken?
Nope.
His name was Martial Law.
Martial Law, eh?
Yeah. And I mean, if ever there was a Bruce Lee like knockoff, there was.
Well,
that.
He's wearing yellow and black pants. Come on now.
Told you. In Tekken 2, he actually has the full jumpsuit. Yep.
Oh, yeah, there's a photo of that.
Told you. Told you. But in elements throughout all over like pop culture and every martial arts themed type film or even mimicking martial arts films, it just seemed like everybody was always trying to sound or look or seem like Bruce Lee, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where like the biggest question that you have to ask is that, is this a movie that helped perpetuate the greatness of Bruce Lee's career? Or is this the movie that essentially became the catalyst for every knockoff and every film after the fact of people pretending to be Bruce Lee or acting like Bruce Lee or taking Bruce Lee's movie titles and changing just one or two things to make it their own. Like, where does this film fall in that? You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of like my question, because to be honest, if I were to look at this, I think I could easily say that you're right. You're 100% right. If this footage, the whatever he had left over, the 30 minutes or so, if that was created as like a special short film or something, like even if there was like story cards in the beginning of the film, like just to give examples of what was happening prior to that point. Like if you had a great story writer, could you imagine if there was a great story writer or a great script writer or even just a great author who could flesh out that beginning tale for Bruce Lee in like these cue cards or whatever, almost like a silent film, I guess, but still. And then you do like these brief cue cards, and then you get to the point in the story where Bruce Lee shows up at the pagoda, fights, and then, I mean, I don't know, they close it out with a story or something, or even just give basic information like this was the lost film that Bruce Lee never got to make. This is the footage that he was able to create with his dear friends. We show you this in honor of who he is, not who he was. Like, I don't know, something like that. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that those are options that are not available because of the fact that this movie got made. And I earnestly feel, I truly feel that this movie began the mimicry of Bruce Lee in film, in the industry, in the film industry. Because it doesn't feel like a Bruce Lee movie. It feels like a movie that uses Bruce Lee's likeness. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
No, I think you're 100% right. I'm really stuck on that fact that he uses funeral in this, because it's just really awful. But yeah, like, there does seem to be like this recurring theme of just Bruce Lee popping up every couple of decades or a couple of years or something.
couple of decades.
Well, like, remember, like, there was that 2016 movie about him that was not
the Birth of a Dragon.
Yeah. And then wasn't there like a 90s film or something?
Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
Yes. Yeah.
But so, I mean, mind you, those were like, those are more, I don't know, those are more biopic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you didn't mean biopic, do you mean like just like
what? Like was, legit, like
that were like him?
Like, did you know there's an actual, I don't even know if this is a real term, but they call it Bruceploitation.
Oh my gosh.
Like, there's actually a list. That's what it looks like.
Oh,
I mean,
dear.
Like there is a movie from 1976 called Bruce Lee, The Man, The Myth. And it stars a man named Bruce Lee, L-I. But it like
about the actor named Bruce Lee, L-I, right?
No, it's called Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee is played by Bruce Lai, I guess.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
But he's like challenged by oncomers, by Thai boxers and Japanese fighters and American gym folks and Italian mafioso to prove his kung fu is the best. It's like, yeah. It's weird. There's like a movie in the 1980s called The Clones of Bruce Lee. Like, there's just...
Oh yeah, I remember I saw that when I was researching this.
Like, these movies... There's a bunch of them, and it's sad because of the fact that it's like, no, that's not okay, you know?
Right.
And I'm currently looking at a list. Guess what the number one movie is?
What, Game of Death?
Game of Death, 1978. And it's funny because of the fact that it's like, it's not, I don't think it's a great movie. To be frank, I don't think Game of Death is a great movie. I can appreciate the scenes that Bruce Lee did, but then that's like saying like, oh, I only watch porn for the music. It's like, I'm not going to watch this movie just for the great scenes of Bruce Lee that makes up like a third or less than a third of the movie. You okay?
That's a fantastic like analogy, because that's really what this is.
Exactly.
Like, the rest of this is so low quality to like the few minutes you get of Bruce Lee, which is not nearly enough.
No. Like, and they're not even real minutes. They're minutes of another film.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate because like if they had like co-done that movie along with this one, like if it was a real, like while they were filming The Way of the Dragon, they actually had another camera crew that was filming the camera crew who were recording The Way of the Dragon, you know, mm-hmm. That would be sick. That would be cool. But that's not the case.
Yeah.
And then immediately, like 5 minutes after that, and you see him in the dressing room talking to that guy, and it's like, that's not his face. Like, that's not real.
None of it's real. Like, even like him entering the dressing room, having to use a shot of Bruce Lee from some other scene in a different movie because like the backgrounds don't match up with where he is. Like, that's a thing that's consistent in like this movie, like until you get to like their archive footage, is that whenever like you actually see the real Bruce Lee, it's from something else, and like they just threw it into this movie, and where he is generally doesn't match up with where people are in the movie.
Nope, not at all. So yeah, I think this movie does more damage than it does good. And it's unfortunate that a lot of people chalk this up to some of his quote unquote greatest films, when even his original idea, his original story isn't recognized in this film. Nor is the idea that he was on the brink of making something really great even mentioned in this movie. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you kind of wish it didn't exist, but you still kind of do wish that it exists. I don't know. It's kind of in that quandary of like, if it didn't exist, would we care? And since it does exist, you know, we're asking ourselves, why is it here, kind of thing? Like, I don't know. What do you think? I'm over here, like, racking my brain.
Yeah, this is a hard one. Because, like, really, this movie shouldn't be here. But on the flip side, I did really enjoy the fight between him and Kareem. Like, I thought that was cool. And it's also, like, one of those things that's, like, referenced, like, quite often. Like, what's her name in Kill Bill? Like,
yeah,
she wore, like, a very similar outfit to that. And
well, and you know, not just that, but in the second Kill Bill movie, she even utilizes the one-inch punch to break out of the coffin, which everybody knows, you know, the one-inch punch was developed by Bruce Lee. Yeah, it's crazy. And another really cool thing is that everybody in that pagoda, they were people who essentially were well known fighters. Like, obviously Dan Inosanto, he was in that film. He was in The Third Floor. Hakim was also there, but even the guy between them, the fighter, he's actually he was at the time a world renowned Korean Hapkido fighter, and a lot of people don't know that about him, but he was somebody who was very known, and you know, widely, you know, respected. So it's a little sad, it's a little kind of interesting, and honestly, I do wish, now that we've talked about it, now that we've kind of aired it out and the grievances and mindsets, I do kind of wish that this film did fly under the radar and just was like that lost piece of footage, you know? Something that, because the world didn't need to see it, you know, in 1978. Yeah. The world didn't need a reminder that like 6 years prior or 5 years prior, they had lost one of the best martial artists in the entire world. Especially with that wonderful scene that you just learned about.
Yep.
Yep. So I think this movie does, it should have been reconsidered. I don't know. I think that's the best way to put it. Cause it's like I said, it's in that mindset of like, I don't want it to go away, but at the same time, I know it's pretty much like irreverent to the legacy of Bruce Lee because it doesn't give him honor. Like, would you say that's true?
Yeah, no. This is very disrespectful of him.
I don't know how to feel about it. Because of the fact that it's so... I don't know. It's... Like I said, it's now at a point where I am... with more understanding in my mind and with thoughts in my mind in terms of recognizing how to review and think about a movie in those aspects, I think it boils down to the film does not honor the man whom it portrays.
Right.
So, I don't know. Any other thoughts, any other things you wanted to mention about the movie?
Oh, gosh. It's like so many things that are just off about this movie that we didn't really even touch on. Like, what is his girlfriend's name? Anne or whatever?
Anne? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why, but she was giving me, like, very strong Temple of Doom vibes.
Yeah. What was her name in Temple of Doom?
I don't remember, but
Andy?
Like...
Andy? No.
She was the worst in Temple of Doom, whatever her name was. We're both blanking on. And this lady in this movie, like, had a very similar air of just screaming about things and then not
Willie.
Actually doing it. What did you say?
Willie.
Yes, Willie.
Willie.
Yeah.
Willie.
Like, basic things she could have done to, like, you know, actually help out or protect herself. Didn't do any of it, but did scream about it. So that's neat.
Yeah.
I also, like, just based on the film itself, I have no idea. Maybe I was, I don't know. I have no idea what this crime syndicate wanted him for. Like, what
that's,
did they
That's
want
a really
him
good
for?
Point. Like, that is a good point. Because now that I think about it, I'm like, you need to call us, Billy. Like, for what?
Yeah, like they just got phone calls the whole time. It's like they got rejected for a date with him or something and like just want him to call back.
Yeah.
And that's what this
it's
really
like,
is
and
about.
If not,
like,
we're going to kill you.
I have no
you.
Idea what their motivation is for even wanting him because like they...
Well, and that old man was not, let's just be honest, that old man was not any kinds of like intimidating. Like he couldn't even hear most of the things that were being said at the time. Like I think that opening scene for him did not set him up well at all as being the main villain. He's like, Doctor, whatever, you know, so-and-so's here. What? What'd you say? And he's like, so-and-so's here. Oh, okay. Well, let's go take care of that. It's like, oh, the man's a grandfather. Okay, I get it. Like, I thought maybe the power was going to be, like, switched over to someone else after, like, they killed the old man, but the old man just lasted till the end.
Yeah, for some reason. Also, during the one scene where Billy is supposed to kill the old man, he takes forever to kill this guy. He's so old, it looks like a good strong push should kill this guy. But like when it comes to like someone else when he's fighting people in the restaurant, oh no, they're dead real quick. There's no reason for that.
Not to mention, when did the old man become a master of wax arts? Because, like, he made, like, a full bust or something And it's not to mention he had like the very unique touch of creating like fake blood and cuts in the wrist of this wax sculpture to make it seem like it was, you know, it, and it's like, no.
Plus, didn't this guy, this old man, didn't this doctor find out that, like, Billy faked his death with the same wax method and then copied that method in the same night? Because wasn't that, like, a progression of the same night?
No, it was a couple days before. Yeah.
Still, that's still relatively fast.
When he's literally working on like the most shapeless form, except for like parts of the face, on this big chunk of wax.
That's what he was doing?
I suppose.
Okay, because like I was like, why the heck is this guy sculpted? How did he self-teach him that?
That's what I'm saying. Impressive. That's what I'm saying. He was probably a master of like the wax arts or something. I don't know. Either way, that was really random and just a bad way to go in this movie.
Yeah, if it seems like I'm pointing things at random, it's because the movie kind of inserts them at random.
It's so, very true.
Yeah.
What
about you, Ed? What else do you have to talk about?
I have to admit that I think the newspaper friend really didn't play much of a big role in the movie.
What was his point?
Like, 100%. At first, I thought he was like CIA or something. I thought he was like a government, like something. And he just works at a newspaper. You don't even know if he works at a newspaper or a magazine. He's just always sitting at his desk and has like paper in his hand and answering the phone. That's all I ever see him do. He answers the phone and makes a call. Answers the phone and makes a call.
That's all they did in the old days, where they were all just sitting at their desk waiting for phone calls with tips to come in.
Well.
Also,
ridiculous.
Like, he was so bland and generic that at first I thought he was stock footage of that British guy from the last movie before he started talking.
Oh, Enter the Dragon?
Yeah. Before he didn't have an accent, then I was like, oh, this is a different character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. This movie is definitely confusing and definitely an interesting insertion into the filmography of Bruce Lee, but nevertheless, I still stand by my words in that I really feel like this film just didn't need to be made. I think plain and simple. It's like how I feel about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Like, it just didn't need to. Yeah, it had Harrison Ford in it. Not in the ways we were used to seeing him. Because he was less mobile, but it just didn't need to be made. Like, plain and simple, you know? So, it sounds like you're going to say something.
I'm not going to comment on this movie. We're not talking about it.
So, wrapping this up, like we said, this is a very interesting movie. And mind you, if you like this movie, by all means, like it. Do whatever you want with it. It's your choice. These are just our opinions, honestly. But we're going to go around the table and give our thoughts on whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I'll go ahead and go first. The film actually fails for me. The storyline kind of veers a bit. Like, I get the element of it. Like, it's like this guy who goes under cover to not be seen so that way he can wreak vengeance on this mob syndicate. All the while, it ends up at a pagoda, which happens to also be the Red Pepper restaurant. Like, I don't know how that worked out. But I think the film doesn't really do enough to create a cohesive storyline. And to be quite frank, I think the original storyline, even in its smallness, would have worked great if that's what they stuck with.
Yep.
So it doesn't pass for me. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it... I'm going to have to give it like 2.5 out of 5. Mm-hmm. The reason why I give it 2.5 is because, so it's going to be interesting. It's one half for the opening scene with Chuck Norris, one half for the scene from Chinese Connection, and then a half of a monocle for each of the fighting scenes that he does with actually Bruce Lee. So that equals to about 2.5 monocles. I wish this movie could have been more pure in its effort to promote and honor Bruce Lee, but it doesn't. And sadly, this is where we find ourselves at within that dynamic. So, yeah. What about you, Spence?
Well, surprisingly, this movie does not pass for me as well.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. Just general rule of thumb, maybe don't use people's like funeral footage in your movie that you're trying to profit off of. Just throwing that out there. I'm like, seriously, that's gonna be so upset.
That's got you so triggered.
It's so rude. Like, just respect people, man. Like, come on. Yeah, as for a rating, I'm gonna give this movie a 2, and it's only because of the things that we say actually. The rest of this movie is hot garbage and should just be dumped off into, like, you know, the ocean or something.
Huh?
It can be part
there
of that
go.
Garbage island. That's disgusting.
I thought you were going to give it a tenth of a point for the wax figure work from the old man. Oh, man. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, this is our own personal opinion. You don't have to agree with us. You don't even have to like it. But it's one of those things you have to consider when it comes to the honoring of a man. And you honor the end of a legacy. And it's ultimately the question you would ask yourself. How would you want to be remembered, to be quite honest? And this is one of those instances where, yeah, this is... You have to ask, you know, would Bruce Lee had wanted to be remembered this way? You know, mm-hmm. I guess, plain and simple, put it justly. But yeah, I mean, let us know your thoughts. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
Actually, I'd be very interested to know, like, other people's thoughts on this movie, especially if you liked it. I'd like to know, like... Besides, obviously, the actual Bruce Lee scenes, what did you really like about this movie?
Like, yeah, that's a really interesting point, like finding out what parts of the movie people actually resonated with and so forth. So, yeah, let us know your thoughts. Drop us a line. We'd love to hear your thoughts and maybe even some things we may have missed. You can also drop us a line also on our Apple podcast link. We have a place where you can drop us a 5-star review and let us know what your thoughts are on this most recent episode. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Stitcher, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora. We are everywhere. So check us out on all those streaming platforms. And we'd love to know where your hierarchy of Bruce Lee films falls, especially with this one. So, but yeah, that about wraps us up. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.